As now, of course, with last week, the story that came in with Judah and his wife, the daughter of Shua, their three sons, Onan and Shelah, and then Tamar, as how she fit into those things. The stories that are in Genesis 38 probably cover a span of at least 20 to 30 years. And so they kind of get nestled there in between Joseph at the age of 17, being sold off by his own brothers to go down to Egypt. The story fits in there to understand, here's the lineage of Jesus, to see who Jesus is, how those things came to be, being a descendant through Judah, and then, of course, through Perez. As we pick up and continue with the story of Joseph through the rest of the book of Genesis, just a couple of verses here in Psalm 105, they give you a little bit of insight. I hope you can kind of appreciate it whenever you read a story in the Old Testament, and then you can turn over to something in another place in Scripture and gain a little insight into what's going on, what's God's motive behind some things. And so often, those are the aspects that we long to know about, even within our own lives. Then, notice here in Psalm 105, look at verse 16. Says, and he called for a famine upon the land. He broke the whole staff of bread. He sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. They afflicted his feet with fetters. He himself was laid in irons. Until the time that his word came to pass, the word of the Lord tested him. A couple of things. Of course, you know that this is already referring to events yet to come in the book of Genesis about the famine that's going to come for 7 years. Well, 7 years of fat first, 7 years of lean. And yet here it is talking about how God's going to provide for his people. And now looking back through this, what's written here in Psalm 105, he says, he called for a famine upon the land and he broke the whole staff of bread. To think of, he completely changed everything. And you think about in terms of bringing a famine upon the earth and going, why would he do this? You see what he's doing here. Then verse 17, he sent a man before them, Joseph, who we know, who was sold as a slave. And they go, Joseph was sent there to be a deliverer for his people. And so as you notice and we read through more and more chapters through the end of the book of Genesis, make sure you see Joseph as a deliverer. He is laying a foundation to deliver his people in a similar parallel fashion, but not the exact same way, to see what Jesus did for us. A deliverer, someone who provided in a way you couldn't provide for yourself. And then to notice this aspect, of course, what you see with Joseph is physical. What you see with Jesus is spiritual. It says, then verse 18, it says, they afflicted his feet with fetters. He himself was laid in irons. And whenever you stop and think about Joseph, it never brings up fetters and irons whenever you read through the book of Genesis. And so probably when we get a little bit later in Genesis 39, to see an opportunity where he would easily be put in fetters and irons while he's doing what is righteous and good. And so then specifically notice here it says, he himself was laid in irons, verse 19, until the time that his word came to pass. And notice that his is a lowercase h. So understand what his words are. The dreams that God gave to Joseph. He told him about these things. And yet, here it's going to come to pass. To see these things as his own family members are going to be bowing down before him. And there's a deliverance that comes with it. But specifically, look at the end of verse 19. It says, the word of the Lord, the covenant God, he says, tested him. When you think about the things that Joseph has to endure, I hope you come back to the idea of testing. Don't think of this in terms of temptation, but think of this as testing, a refinement. And to see these difficulties that Joseph goes through and going, look at what God is aiming to do, the covenant God who's made these promises. Look at what he's going to do in the life of Joseph. Now, come back to Genesis 39 and look at verse 1. Genesis 39, look at verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. Real quickly, you get to see how things have unfolded in the life of Joseph. So often we have things that are moments of testing in our own lives. It's not that God ever tempts us. We know that's not the case from James chapter 1. There are things that come through in life that you look at and you go, am I going to walk by faith or am I going to just give up? And they can be all kinds of situations. We mentioned some even tonight in our prayer requests. But going, medical situations can come up, and here's an opportunity. Am I going to walk by faith and trust what God's doing? It doesn't always guarantee that I'm going to be healed, but am I going to walk by faith? Sometimes a job opportunity hits, or sometimes you lose a job for doing what's right, and you go, oh, am I really going to rely upon the Lord? Or am I going to start grasping at straws to do things that are underhanded? And realize, here's these situations, because so often in times of testing, it's not times that are easy. It's times that are rather difficult and hard, and sometimes even excruciating, and really, really hard. Now, notice here it talks about Joseph, sold off by his own family. Can you imagine that? And there are probably moments in our lives where we could imagine that because of our stupidity or our wickedness. But to be doing what your father had told you to do, to go up and get a report. And because of that, here you are being carried down, being sold as a slave. And now you're on your way down to Egypt, completely unknowing what is about to unfold. You talk about uncertainty. Sometimes we feel like, oh, you know, I have certain things that are uncertain in my life. Can you imagine being in this situation as a 17-year-old? Now, over the course of Genesis 39, you're going to see Joseph go from the age of 17 to the age of 28 in this chapter. So understand, we're covering a span of more than a decade. So here he is, 17 years old. He sold to Potiphar. Potiphar in the Egyptian language literally carries with it, he whom Ra has given. Ra is the Egyptian sun god. Pharaoh is considered to be the son of Ra. And so here it is, and yet here's Potiphar, who's seen as, this is Ra's gift. That's what his name means. And to go, and he's an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh. So he's not somebody who's just a commoner. This is someone who is in charge of those who protect the life of Pharaoh. To be this close to the leadership, to the king of Egypt. Then, he says, the captain of the bodyguard bought him from the Ishmaelites, didn't tell you how much, who had taken him down there. I want you to notice a phrase. It's going to show up four times in Genesis chapter 39 with Joseph. It's going to say, and the Lord was with him. It's going to bring it up in verse 2. It's going to bring it up in verse 3. It's going to bring it up in verse 21. It's going to bring it up in verse 23. And to see what that means in the midst of all these difficulties. Notice verse 2 and 3. The Lord, the covenant God, was with Joseph. So he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. So you know that Potiphar is not just an Egyptian officer. He is an Egyptian. Verse 3. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. Potiphar could sit back and watch how things went with Joseph. Enough to know here he is as an Egyptian whose name is tied to Ra, the sun god. And yet he looks at what Joseph is doing in his own household, and he recognizes your God is with you. The covenant God, Yahweh, he is with you. It seems like everything you do, it always turns out prosperous. Now, here's something I want you to make sure that you lock in. Do you typically think about God is with somebody who got sold off by his own brothers? You mean now you have to work as a slave and the Lord is with you? Those are not typically the kind of things we think of that happen to someone that the Lord is with. We think of, oh, that means they have freedom. Oh, that means that they don't have to submit to somebody to be over them. And yet you notice here is where it is with Joseph. And it says he became a successful man as a slave. Here's something else. I just kind of want you to think about this as it goes through the Old Testament. There's only a handful of people. Well, more than five. There's more than a handful of people in the Old Testament where it talks about that the Lord was with them. Who would you guess it talks about? I'll pose it this way to start. Who would you think? You would think Job, but Job is not one who's mentioned that way. Even Abraham is not mentioned that way. David is one. David is mentioned that way, and it talks about it specifically in 1 Samuel 18:12. And it talks about how that Saul, King Saul, could see David, and he could see that the Lord was with him. And at that point in time, Saul, the Spirit of God had already left Saul. But Saul could see, look at what's going on in David's life. It could be seen on the outside end, even by someone like Saul, even an outsider like Potiphar, of going, Lord's with you. The covenant God is with you. There's nobody else in the book of Genesis that's mentioned that way. The Lord being with. There's some other people in the Old Testament, Joshua, in the book of Joshua, talks about, and the hand of the Lord was with Joshua. In the book of Judges, it talks about all the judges as being those that the hand of the Lord is with the judges. Samuel is another. We've already mentioned David, King Hezekiah, King Jehoshaphat. All of those are people that says that the hand of the Lord is with them. When you think about those people, Joseph, Joshua, Judges, Samuel, David, Hezekiah, Jehoshaphat, what do you see as the commonality among those men in terms of their character? What do you see? They serve God. They're faithful. What else do you see? Yeah, even whenever they mess up, even whenever they sin, they turn back to do what's right. And so you look through this chapter in Genesis 39 and we go, the hand of the Lord is with Joseph. And you're going to see what all that entails. But going, does it start to make you ask the question, do I want the Lord to be with me? Because if you look at how things turn out for Joseph and Joshua and the judges and David and Hezekiah and Jehoshaphat, how does it turn out for them? It turns out well, with rare exception. And you start thinking, the hand of the Lord being with you doesn't mean everything is easy. It doesn't mean, okay, everything goes my way. Which is for some reason the way we think about it. Like if the hand of the Lord is with me, then things are going to go great. And notice it talks about him as being prosperous. Joseph. Let's take a look at a New Testament example. Look over at Acts chapter 11. Acts chapter 11. Look down at verse 19. Acts chapter 11, verse 19. So then those who were scattered because of the persecution that occurred in connection with Stephen, remember Stephen had been stoned to death in Acts chapter 7, made their way to Phoenicia and Cyprus and Antioch, speaking the word to no one except the Jews alone. But there, talking about in Antioch, were some of them, men of Cyprus and Cyrene, who came to Antioch and began speaking to the Greeks also, preaching the Lord Jesus. And the hand of the Lord was with them. Look at what they're doing. They're taking the word of God and they're preaching it to who? Not just Jews anymore. It's going to Greeks. And they're coming to faith. And you notice this, and the hand of the Lord was with them. And it says, and a large number who believed turned to the Lord. The news about them, verse 22, the news about them reached the ears of the church at Jerusalem, and they sent Barnabas off to Antioch. They wanted a firsthand account. They send Barnabas, the son of encouragement, that's where he got that nickname from the apostles. They sent him up to Antioch. It says, then when he arrived and witnessed the grace of God, God's grace upon them, not just the Greeks, the grace of God even upon those men of Cyprus and the men who were preaching and teaching. And the people, he says, he rejoiced and began to encourage them all with resolute heart to remain true to the Lord. If you want to have the hand of the Lord with you, what must you be? You've got to be true to the Lord. When you think about Joseph, is he true to the Lord? You think about Samuel, is he true to the Lord? When you think about David, is he true to the Lord? We know there's an exception there, but he turns back. You start noticing in Hezekiah, Jehoshaphat, you see this pattern as it goes through. But let me tell you about something even better. It talks about here, and this is the only time in the New Testament where it uses that phrase. What is better than having the hand of the Lord with you? To have God in you. Not just be with you, but to be in you. Jesus even talks about it with his 11. He says that I will be in you and you will be in me and we will be in my Father. Now, look at the Gospel of John. Look at John chapter 17. John chapter 17, look at verse 20. Actually, go back to verse 19. He says, for their sakes, talking about his apostles, he says, for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they themselves also may be sanctified in truth. He says, if I don't show them what this looks like, how will they ever be sanctified? It's just truth. He says that they themselves also may be sanctified in truth. Notice who's got to make a choice. They do. Verse 20. I do not ask on behalf of these alone, not just the 11. He says, but for those also who believe in me through their word. He says, because they're going to go out and preach and teach about me, the truth. He says, and people are going to believe. He says, I'm praying for those people. Guess who that is? You ever read any of the writings of the apostles? You ever read 1st, 2nd Peter? John? 1st, 2nd, 3rd John? Revelation? Ever read James? Start noticing, this is us. Jesus was praying for us. Included with all the rest who come to believe through their word. Verse 21. That they may all be one, even as you, Father, are in me. He says, I want them to be one like I am in you. How one is that? Can you be any more unified than that? It's going to have to rally around truth. And we're going to have to choose truth. That they may be that we're going to have to choose. He says that they may all be one, even as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also may be in us. That's much better than the Lord being with you. That's the Lord in. He says, so that the world may believe that you sent me. He says, and that's the reason why. That those who come to faith will know that God, you sent me, Jesus, to the earth to do these things. Now, come back to Genesis chapter 39. So you see this oneness. And so we look back through the Old Testament and this idea of the Lord's hand being with you, or the Lord was with someone, is really more so of an Old Testament idea than a New Testament. When we read the one exception there in Acts chapter 11, and you can see why, they were going to say, we're going to hold to who Jesus is. So you notice here in Genesis 39 verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man. Here's why he becomes successful. He's going to do things God's way, working off of God's wisdom, not his own. He says, so he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian, Potiphar. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him, and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. Can you imagine? It's like every time I turn around, something else is going prosperous. Verse 4. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant. And he made him overseer over his house, and all that he owned he put in his charge. So Potiphar doesn't just say, hey, that's great. He says, how about we put you over more? He doesn't say, oh, you know what? I see that everything's going well in your hand. I don't want to give you too much. You ever been the worker in the office that things are going well because you're walking according to Christ, not just because you're great at what you do, but just because you see what the Lord is doing? He's opening doors you can't open for yourself. And then all of a sudden, the boss turns around and goes, you know what? I think I want to give you more to do. And you're sitting there thinking, whew. There's so much already. And then what does the Lord give you the strength to do? He gives you the strength to do it. So that you know where the strength comes from. Right? Here's Joseph. Everything that you have. And Potiphar's response, I'll just give you everything over to you. And you'll make everything prosper. It'll be great for me. Now, notice how it continues on. Verse 5. It came about that from the time he made him overseer in his house and over all that he owned, the covenant God, the Lord, blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. Which tells you this was probably a statement of Potiphar noticed this over the course of multiple years. It's not like you just have one good crop and go, man, that guy's really good at what he does. Like, well, you know, it's just 1 year. And then all of a sudden it starts to stack up. And you go in 2 years, 3 years. What are you dealing with? It doesn't give you a time frame necessarily. But understand, you're talking about multiple years here. So, does this seem like someone who's favored of God, that you're working and striving hard for your master, and then all of a sudden he gives you more to do? Does that feel like all the favor of God? No. Now, he's talking about the favor of Pharaoh here, I mean, of Potiphar, but going, man, the Lord is with me, and this is what happens? It's amazing how that thought of going, I thought the Lord is with me, why are things getting harder? What is God doing with Joseph? Preparing him. He's refining him. Testing him. Just like what it said in Psalm 105. So don't think just because situations get more difficult. How many times are we so lacking in faith and so wrapped up in self that whenever difficult times come, we go, why is the hand of the Lord against me? When really what's going on is of our benefit. Chuck. Right. And to think sometimes there are situations where here you come into a, I'm going to say a job situation, and all of a sudden things get much better. And people see that, but they don't really understand that it was the Lord is what was granting things in the midst of this until you leave. And they go, what happened? Notice how it continues. Verse 6. So he left everything he owned in Joseph's charge, and with him there he did not concern himself with anything except for the food that he ate. He's like, the only thing I care about is what I eat. Everything else, Joseph takes care of. Seems like a pretty good life for him, until he realized some other things. Then notice the tail end of verse 6. First time it gives you anything to say about Joseph's appearance. It says, now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And you realize, he's a handsome guy. And you look at that, and I go, I don't necessarily, you know, think of that just by itself, but you go, Rachel was talked about as being beautiful in form and face. And of course, here's Joseph, son of Rachel, and going, he's a handsome guy. And so often we think about people maybe who are attractive in a physical sense of going, oh, that'd be so great. Well, you're about to see something completely different. You're going to see something that goes, maybe this isn't the most wonderful blessing to have. Handsome in form and appearance. I want to assume that he's kind of muscular, but it doesn't say that. Verse 7, it came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph, and she said, lie with me. Well, that's not so much fun to be handsome now. Here's your master's wife. Everything's been given into your control in the household. And now here she comes. And notice, she's not just kind of tiptoeing through the tulips here. He says, how about you lie down with me? Whoa. I mean, these are kind of those moments that you don't always go, okay, I see this is coming. Here's the situation. And notice where Joseph's mind is. He doesn't go, and notice it doesn't say anything about how she looks. That's not the point of the story. But look at his mindset. Have you ever had times where situation pops up and you fumble about your words, you can hardly put things together, and when it's all said and done, you go, oh, I wish I'd thought of something better to say. Look at where Joseph's heart and his mind are. You realize why he has favor. You realize why the Lord is with him. Because look at where he goes with this. Verse 8. But he refused. He didn't even entertain the idea. But he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. And he has put all that he owns in my charge. He says, I stand in a place of authority that your husband has given to me. Verse 9. There is no one greater in this house than I. Ooh. What's he saying about Potiphar's wife? You're not greater than me. I don't have to obey your command. Wow. You talk about standing for something that's right, even when you may suffer for it. Is this what the Lord being with you is like? You get put in these difficult situations and you have to choose. Am I going to walk by faith? Now, Joseph isn't a married man. He's not going to be married for at least another 10 years. He's going to be in his 30s by the time he gets married. Think about, here's a man who's probably in his early 20s at this point in the story, and going, here's a woman that wants to lie down with you. He says, there's no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you. He says, you're the only thing that I'm not in charge of. Only one. He says, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God? The recognition of knowing, if I do this, I'm sinning against God. The very one who is with me. Have we come to that realization yet? That sin is not really against people. It can also be against people. But the sin's really against God. Sin is an attack on the wisdom of God. Saying to God, lying is better. Saying to God that not honoring someone else's marriage vow is better. You go, sin is where we're telling God you're wrong. You got it wrong. Is that really the way we see sin? Because that's the way we should see it. And it might change your attitude toward it. Instead of going, you can always ask for forgiveness. Yeah, but how much are you going to pay for it? It's not free. He says, how then could I do this great evil? He doesn't even just say it's evil. He says it's a great evil in terms of adultery. And sin against God. And notice, he makes this statement, and you might think, well, man, that's the end of that. But it's not. Verse 10. As she spoke to Joseph day after day, he did not listen to her to lie beside her or be with her. He didn't even want to be with her. And to think, here's the erosion she's hoping to cause. This tells you how attractive she thought Joseph was. She didn't give up at the first time. Day after day after day after day. What is Joseph learning? What's he learning? Self-control, endurance. Sin doesn't let up. It doesn't say, okay, you won today, so we're never coming back. You go, you're going to have to be steadfast and keep on going. It doesn't tell you what he said any other day. It just tells you the first one. Now, notice how this goes on. Verse 11. All of a sudden, her great desire for him turns. Like things often do. Just when you thought it was bad, sin doesn't go, oh, that's enough. I give up. Verse 17. Now it happened one day that he went into the house to do his work. Notice he's still working. Here he is at work. And none of the men of the household was there inside. She caught him by his garment saying, lie with me. You got an exclamation point after that one? It does in my translation. I mean, she is flat out commanding him, commit this evil with me. Now, she doesn't see it that way probably, but he does. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and went outside. He'd rather be down a garment and flee away than to even entertain the idea of staying around. You see conviction inside of Joseph? Can you see the determination inside of Joseph? Can you see why the Lord is with him? He's going to keep on honoring God. And notice that is the reason why he's doing the things he's doing, or not doing the things he's abstaining from. This is what's going on inside of Joseph. Verse 13. When she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled outside, she called to the men of her household and said to them, see, he has brought in a Hebrew to us to make sport of us. Amusement. Look at what he's done. Talking about her own husband. She really loves him, doesn't she? She says, he came in to me to lie with me, and I screamed. When he heard that I raised my voice and screamed, he left his garment beside me and fled and went outside. Here you are. Doing what is righteous. And now you have somebody who is in authority who lies against you. Does it feel like the Lord is with you? In those moments, our brain goes somewhere else at times, doesn't it? We don't think about the words of Jesus where he says, "Blessed are you when you are persecuted and insulted for my name's sake." He says, "You should rejoice and be happy." A lot of times we go, "If the Lord is with me, I wouldn't have to go through this." Because we're not thinking in terms of refinement. We got to see this life in terms of the difficulties of going, what's God trying to refine in me? How's he going to really make my faith more concise and stronger and more potent? That's exactly what James 1 talks about. But notice it here. He's enduring these hardships and the Lord is with him. It tells you in these moments, it's about the choices that we're making. Then it continues on, verse 16. So she left his garment beside her until her master came home. She was holding on to that thing. Verse 17. Then she spoke to him, her husband, with these words. The Hebrew slave whom you brought to us came in to me to make sport of me. And as I raised my voice and screamed, he left his garment beside me and fled outside. And now she tells this lie right to her husband. What does her husband know about Joseph? Everything that he does, I put in his hands. He's as trustworthy as they come. More trustworthy than any Egyptian in his household. And look at what he's brought me. He's brought me a prosperous existence on every front. And now you're coming telling me that this is what he did. And he believes her. Because notice the next verse. Verse 19. Now when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spoke to him, saying, "This is what your slave did to me," his anger burned. Now, you think about that kind of statement, and you go, this is somebody who's enraged at me for doing what's right? Does it really feel like the Lord is with me? Because he is. Because you stand to do what is true. You stand to do what is righteous. You stand to do what is holy. And to go, that is what gives you strength in the moment. Because that's who the Lord gives his grace to. If he gives in to Potiphar's wife, can you imagine where this story goes? Uphill or downhill? Downhill pretty fast. And you realize in these situations, we got to change the way we see this existence. Of seeing these difficulties as opportunities, rather than seeing them as, what did I do to deserve this? We're a child of God, and he's trying to refine within us things that are eternal. And if we could just see that eternal, boy, it would change the way we see our existence here. All right. Lord willing, to come back next week, we'll pick up in verse 19 and move forward. Have a good week.